KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music, if it is geek. It's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. I am joined with me is...
Caleb.
That's right. We are here to rock you out after a Halloween weekend.
Halloween.
That's right. Hopefully you had a good time over the holiday and, had some fun and...
Because that was Halloween. Anyways.
It's so weird. I can't hear you in my headphones.
Oh, really? Actually, I can't hear me either. Come to think of it. I hear myself.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Wait, there I hear
you.
Okay.
I mean, you're showing up on there like when you talk, but it's like I didn't hear you. But anyway, that's not important.
The main thing is that they can hear us.
Yeah.
And if you can hear us, that means you can participate with the show.
Yes!
You can do that over at facebook.com/robotsattackshow. Or twitter.com/robotsattackme, and those are our best ways to get a hold of us right now. They are open in the background. We check them throughout the show. When you hit us up there, we are excited, and you will be interacting with the brilliance that is Robots Attack Show.
That's right, and we'd love to hear about your Halloween plans. If you did anything fun,
yes.
And speaking of. What did you do over the holiday weekend?
Let's see. It was fairly low key. The hang out with family for the morning. We did. It was the annual pumpkin carving party, and then we went to. There was a short break. We did some trick or treating with the kiddos, and then went to go see Crimson Peak with Jason.
Oh, okay. How was that?
I thought it was rather good. I don't quite understand why it's getting sort of the lackluster reviews that it's been, that critically it hasn't been like a resounding success. But then again, Guillermo del Toro movies haven't been a resounding critical success really since Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, like, he's made good movies since then, but like that one was like the critical mass's sweet spot for him.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems he definitely seems to have the fans on his side.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the critics, it's kind of hit or miss.
Yeah, and I can see what some of them are saying, like the story itself is not exceedingly unique. It's not like breaking new grounds in horror genre filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I'm not sure you need to break new grounds. I think what he does is he makes a really, really good story within the confines of this very of this genre.
Okay.
And in doing that, he's By kind of like not straying far from the hedges, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
He has space to create his own unique twists in the story he's telling, which are actually quite clever, I think.
Okay. Now, as we know, Jason's a big kind of horror, scary movie kind of guy.
Yes.
You, not so much. It's not that you dislike them, but it's not your favorite genre. Yeah. No. So where would this one like...
This one is still definitely a horror film, but because its key focus is really telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't push me back much.
Okay. Okay.
And also like the Del Toro's movies, like since like I said, the story is sort of the foundation upon which he builds everything else. It's like, and ghost stories, depending on how they're what I'm getting is that when. The point of the movie is to tell a good story that happens to be a spooky story.
Mm-hmm.
it's much easier for me to process that than it is like, here's a scary thing, and I'm Martha's scary thing, and we're going to do this sound effect throughout the film to just creep you out of your pants for the next 2 weeks kind of thing. Like,
okay, I see what you mean.
Like, The Grudge is my prime example of movies that I never want to ever watch ever again. Because it was a really, and it's not a knock against it, it was very successful at doing what it wanted to do, which is scare the pants off me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, that's not an aspect I enjoy. Like, I don't mind like a scary story or a story with like weirdness or depth. Like,
chills kind of thing. Like
a dark story doesn't turn me off. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not really I'm not generally in the mood to be scared out of my mind every time I watch a movie. And this one was good at being scary, kind of spooky, creepy, but without like, you know, just running headlong into some of the shocker horror genre thing. Like, it still was about the characters and the story, and none of them made, and that's another thing, like, never, there wasn't the typical like, wow, that was a really bad decision, why are you doing that?
Okay,
I never quite got that sense. Like,
I always hate when that happens. You're like, what? Why would you do that? Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Yeah, there is aspects of that, like, because that's kind of like a horror staple. Like, everyone, you don't get into a horror movie by making a good choice. Let's be honest. But the main protagonist, she still seems smart as she goes through it, even though like she's in a situation where like this is obviously like weird. Something about this place is not right.
Okay. Okay.
And because she's inquisitive, like, she does things that, you know, might be considered a poor choice any other time, but, you know, it's okay.
Okay.
It still works within the confines of her character and the story they're telling.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, here's something that won't scare you at all.
What's that?
Grab your Soul Man sunglasses and head to Campbell's Historic Heritage Theater for the official Blues Brothers review on Thursday, November 5th at 8 p.m. Jake Elwood and the band hit the right balance of humor, music, and mayhem in this live concert that combines the comedy and hits from the original movie and pays homage to Chicago's rich history of blues, gospel, and soul music. For more information, call 408-866-2700 or visit heritagetheater.org. That's 408-866-2700 or heritagetheater.org.
And so they're putting the band back together?
Oh, I think so. Nice, nice. All right, well, cool. Sounds like you did a kind of a traditionally thing for Halloween, watch a spooky movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, nice, nice. Yes.
So what did you get up to?
Well, I did something that I'm guessing is going to become kind of a tradition in the new age of the internet and all that. Since my normal stream days on Twitch do fall on a Saturday, and Halloween happened to fall on a Saturday, I was thinking, well, okay, do I want to do something for Halloween, you know, happens to be that day. So I went, okay, you know what, fine. I'll dress up and do something, I guess. And then I was kind of looking through my games and was like, well, I don't really have any kind of like spooky game or anything to play. Then I noticed, you know, Xbox was doing a quote-unquote spooky game sale.
Right.
And, you know, I found in there Costume Quest 2 for super cheap. So I was like, okay, you know what? That looks like that would be fun. And it's right in the price where being unemployed, it fits very nicely.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, I'll do that. And then I'll dress up as Space Dandy, since that's the only costume I still have left from last year. So I did that and streamed, and it was fun. It started off a little slow, and then I ran into like Windows decided to update while I was streaming, so
it
was taking all of the processing power and was like, okay, I'm gonna be right back, everybody, as soon as this is done. So that was one little hiccup, but after that, as the night went on, more people started showing up. I mean, I kind of figured that most people would be out doing stuff, and so they, if they were going to show up, it would kind of show up more towards, you know, the end or about halfway through, and that's pretty much kind of how it ended up happening. It kind of started rolling a few hours in, and the kind of backtrack a little bit. Then the previous night, my buddy, streaming buddy Kane, he since he streams on Fridays, he did his kind of Halloween stream, spooky game that night. And we had come up with some ideas for stuff to do in the chat while he was streaming.
Right.
And so one of them was a trivia thing. And so I did that on his. And then we didn't have enough time to do the second game. So I told him, hey, well, if I stream on Halloween, when you come in, if you want to do the what if game, you could do that while I was in the chat. So he did that. And I know you were there.
Yeah.
Bainey was there and stuff like that. And so I got to kind of see little glimpses of it while I was playing the game. But I was kind of, I didn't get to see a whole lot, but it seemed like you guys were having a lot of fun with the different scenarios and stuff like that. So,
yeah, that was a fun game. It was one of those like basics was here's a classic horror scenario. How would you survive? Sort of thing, and why?
Okay. Yeah. I know he kind of ran the idea by me and showed me a few examples. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that would be fun. And he was kind of. We were kind of trying to figure out like who would be the like ref or, you know, kind of final decision and stuff like that. And at the time, since we were planning on doing it in Kane's game, you know, it was like, well, it probably shouldn't be you because you'll be playing the game and it'll, you know, you'll have to stop, read over everybody's thing. And, you know, it's like, you're welcome to do that, but it might slow things down for people who are coming in to just kind of watch the game. So I was like, why don't we, you know, like we could let the moderators do it and kind of scroll through, you know, whoever's modding, like take a turn for each scenario. Like, okay, it's your turn. So I think that's, I don't know exactly. I'm assuming that's kind of how it went in mine.
Went down, yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah. He roped in a couple people that weren't up to play, but were up to participate.
Okay.
So.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. It looked like people were having a lot of fun and kind of piggybacking off of that. One of my other buddies streaming, he has this really cool bot that has these like little mini games and different stuff. And I asked him about it. And so I ended up downloading it. And so I'm messing around with it. And so it's, if I can get it all to work, which I'm hoping to for Extra Life this Saturday, when I stream for 24 hours, it should be a lot of fun. Cause they're neat little games that people in the chat can play. So, you know, it's kind of like you can watch the game and kind of play this little game also while you're in there. And it's, I've noticed in his streams, a lot of people seem to have fun playing them also. So it kind of gives them something to do while, you know, if maybe they're not super interested in the game that you're streaming, but they want to hang out. But, you know, if no one's talking, or it might get people talking, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Or perhaps you're playing a game that requires strategy so that there's a little bit of time spent looking at the screen going, The people that are playing have something to enjoy along with you trying to figure out how to get through the situation.
So I'm trying to think if obviously, you know, watch the episodes for the watch party, which we'll discuss later. I'm trying to think. I don't think I saw any movies. Watch some stuff here and there, but I think the big thing I think was just the Halloween stream.
And still
trying to get the stream already, you know, the testing out different stuff and everything like that. Okay, this setting's here, this and this, trying to get rid of any kind of delays on mouth movement and the stream. And
the audio syncs is probably the one quote unquote weakness of it right now.
Okay. But
other than that, it looks really good.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad we figured out this one audio issue from last week, so I'll fix things.
That's
so
good.
So that's good, because yeah, there wasn't like when I was playing Life is Strange, there wasn't like when people were speaking, like there was no sound. Like everyone was like, I can't hear them. I can't hear them. So we're like spending all this time like, let me try this setting. Let me try this setting. And then finally, the very last thing, Kane, ironically, you know, suggested, tried it, bam, fixed it. Like, yes, we're all like, all right.
That's funny you mentioned that, because like the other day I was playing the last episode of the Telltale's Tales from the Borderlands. Which is totally awesome.
Yes.
And I had to turn on the subtitles because I could not hear the dialogue
for
a good 80% of the time.
Oh, okay.
Like, whenever there was like, like kind of dramatic music mm. or just even background music at all. It's like they were pushing the vocal audio underneath it.
You might want to check your
I'm on the new Windows 10 dashboard.
You might want to check your audio settings and see if anything's gotten like changed just for some reason, like, because I don't know how you're on, if you're using HDMI or optical cable or
HDMI for everything.
Okay.
It funnels into the TV and that dumps it out onto the amplifier. So.
Okay. Through an HDMI or using an optical from the TV to the,
TV is technically just the RCA to, RCA out the, standard analog audio.
Okay. Yeah, you might want to go in those settings and change. Yeah, I think you want you're going to have to change that to stereo uncompressed, I think.
Okay.
Instead of, because that's what I ended up having to change it to, and then mm-hmm. on the HDMI end, mm-hmm. and then everyone could hear dialogue. They could hear the voiceover work and everything like that, because they were just hearing, sounds like the same thing. They were just hearing a lot of background stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was the problem I was hearing. All right. So
you might want to just go in and just see what your settings are mm-hmm. and play around with those and then see. But yeah, I too also played that. I think we should definitely talk about that when we know Jason has finished that episode. Then we can all see, because I am dying to know like who your team was at the end. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that was good. It was really good.
Yeah.
I hope there's a season two.
I really do too.
Yeah.
They left it open. And I think that I suspect they will, because it seems to have been a big hit with both critics and players.
And even people who weren't really like super into Borderlands really mm-hmm. liked it. So that's a good sign.
Yes. Yeah, of course, in some ways it's the least Borderlands, but at the same time it's still really, really Borderlands.
So yeah,
I'm curious how like the non-traditional Borderlands players like felt about it.
Yeah, it still has enough Borderlands to it, so you mm-hmm. feel like if you're familiar with Borderlands, you like Borderlands, you're like you still get that little taste, but mm-hmm. but it's got more, I don't know, more story kind of focus than two wasn't. More story, but you know, this is definitely more the characters and their interactions and stuff, whereas Borderlands 2 was more loot and shoot. And
yeah, Borderlands 1 was very much, there's the thing over there, go get it.
Yeah.
Bang, 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 bang. Okay, you got it. Which is not bad, it just wasn't, the story wasn't its strongest suit.
Yeah, and then 2 improved upon that mm-hmm. a lot, but yeah, this...
I feel like in some ways, like, Telltale... I'm sure they were working on it long before Tiny Tina's Adventure came out, but I feel like there was a certain amount of like kind of cross pollination where it's like that was very a very story driven like Borderlands 2 scenario,
yeah.
And then Telltale's is also a very story driven, very character driven stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be curious to know, because I mean I know Anthony Birch, one of the writers on Borderlands 2, mm-hmm. you know, worked with Telltale, mm-hmm. so I'd be curious to kind of know like how much he worked on the process of. You know, when they were laying things down, like,
right.
you know, I know he came back for, I don't know if all the episodes or most of the episodes in varying degrees, you know, mm-hmm. to write certain stuff. But that kind of like foundation at the beginning, like, you know, how much, you know, he was involved, maybe that kind of helped, you know,
that,
like, especially since it takes place after Borderlands mm-hmm. 2. So, you know, kind of getting his input and where things
could have gone.
Yeah. So
definitely.
But yeah, that was my week since last we spoke, and sounds like you had a good one. I had a pretty mm-hmm. decent one. And I think on that note,
yes,
we will take a music break
mm-hmm.
and then we'll come back and discuss the watch party.
Sounds great.
So again, if you're unfamiliar with our watch party, we, Caleb, it was his turn to pick. We rolled the dice. He won the die roll.
Yep. And completely unexpected.
and chosen the original Dirty Pair series from
1985.
And so we're going to be discussing episodes 6, 7,
8.
Six, seven, and 8.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're gonna hit those episodes after this music break. And if you've watched them with us, which is what we encourage our listeners to do, so we can get your opinions and thoughts on those episodes as well. Or if you haven't yet, it's still not too late to participate. There's 24 episodes, so you could tune into this, kind of listen in, see if it sounds cool to you, and then jump on board with us for next week. Mm-hmm. We'll discuss the next three episodes. But all right, let's take that music break. But first, let me read. I got a couple minutes before, but let's read that PSA, and then we can jump into music.
Sounds great.
I think we'll go with the classic one. If you want to listen to KSU, even when you're not near radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website. Never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
You can find us faster by searching for KSCU. Our call letters are unique to us on the globe.
That's right. All right. We're going to take a music break and then we'll be back with the watch party and more Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. We are now in watch party. Mm-hmm. We're going to discuss the episodes 6, 7, and 8 of Dirty Pair. So, gents, mm-hmm. let us start with episode 6.
A lot of danger, a lot of dummies.
That's right. Your thoughts on this episode?
Well, it definitely continues the highly episodic sort of madcap style of the show. I think it did introduce the reoccurring villain, though, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Oh, okay.
But,
I forget his name. I don't know if it's something.
Let's go with Heya.
I can't remember if it was like age.
I can't remember for positive either.
It was one of those classic, like, looks like a chick, but it's not a chick. Mm-hmm. Japanese anime characters.
Yes. The Japanese aesthetic allows for the idea of beauty to be to transcend gender. So the more beautiful a person can be is not a mark against one's masculinity per se in certain groupings of Japanese philosophy. So
Okay.
That is kind of a thing.
I've noticed that in other animes. Oh, that dude looks like a chick. Like But I gotta say, this was probably, if not my favorite episode so far, one of my favorite episodes of the series.
Cool.
I'll say because they actually like worked really well as a team. Like they didn't have them like bumbling and like causing. They used their like dirty pair, quote unquote, like to actual advantage.
Yes.
Yeah. And like I don't know. It was just like, it was refreshing. I was like, oh, it was some cool space battles, like some, just some cool battles in general. And then like just kind of each of them playing off of each other. And like I said, like actually being smart and like, okay, like just the whole idea of it. Like, all right, we're going to like, it was strange like that they ended up with the prism, but I guess it was all random, and of course they're gonna have to have it because it's the show. But it was cool that they played off of that, where they played up like Kay, I'll just give you this fake because clearly we have the deco, and they're like, oh, we have the prism. Okay, so all right.
Plan.
Yeah, and then just like, oh well, okay, I'll give you. There's a bomb on this thing, so I'll give you that. So
It was kind of interesting seeing them actually like work, sort of see what their teamwork is like when they are more camaraderie than competition.
Yeah, it was cool seeing Yuri like flying the ship and dodging all the shots and stuff like that, and then Kay was doing all the other kind of. Not grunt work, but
I liked with the small ship that it was sort of like, I don't know, kind of like an old Voltron moment or something like that, where it was like, whoa, what the heck is happening? And it was obviously her like suiting up for something to happen, and all of this stuff like shifting around on the ship, like what the heck is going on?
Yeah,
here?
Yeah.
And then the little ship sprouts out.
Pops out, yeah.
And she starts kicking butt with it.
Yeah,
because that was pretty good.
Mega lasers on it and stuff like that. Yeah. That, and also, it kind of like, it, I think why one of the things they did really smart is that they played to each of the pair's strengths for like, this as like major plot points for the episode, which was kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't have too many of the, like, which will come into play in some of the next episodes, but too much of the, like, I don't know how exactly to say it, but I don't think a woman wrote this dialogue, like,
no.
Like the kind of dialogue for these characters. Like a lot of, there wasn't too much of that in this episode. So it's like, you still had a little bit here and there. So it was like still to the characters, but as we might discuss in some of the next episodes and some of the previous ones, there can be a lot of stuff where like, whoa, okay, I know, you know, you have to think back when this was happening. And
yeah,
stuff,
and and even if a woman did write any of the dialogue, it wouldn't be maybe a modern quote unquote woman.
Yeah, so.
It might still end up sounding not so dissimilar, anyway.
Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, I enjoyed. I enjoyed this one. It was nice. It's like, oh, cool. All right, this one's fun. I like the
kind of a classic keeper sort of situation, and seeing them improvise so much was a lot of fun too.
Yeah, and speaking of fun, if you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes, but you've got limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. Your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. All right. Unless there's anything else, shall we move on to the next episode? Or
yes, let's move on to Love Is Everything, Petting Their Lives to Elope, which is more the translation that came off of off of Hulu. The other translation here on Wikipedia says betting their lives on elopement. Which I'm sure is technically correct, but that's not English.
Yeah, it's funny. I've noticed even Hulu sometimes will have two different names between the name that's on the actual like master list and then the individual episode.
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of these titles.
So. Right.
These are pretty close. Don't read too much into it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
this one, okay, just so I remember correctly, this is the one with the, what's his name? Clicky?
Yes.
And the...
So the basic premise of the episode is super rich guy is trying to marry off his son so that his son won't run off with the woman that he loves, who turns out was once a dude. And then...
Yeah.
Also a very pretty dude.
Yeah.
And then there's also this weird sub... the B plot line of mistresses of rich
yeah
guys, and
yeah,
like a lot of
this episode was weird. It was like it hit a lot of these really bad cliches, but then it had sprinkled like interesting stuff, like like I kind of guessed that's what the surprise was going to be, why the dad didn't want the son. But it was interesting, like they touched on this subject, like just you don't like think, you know, these older animes would address stuff like that, you know, like we're kind of used to like, oh, that's, you know, pretty common in stuff we're watching now, but.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny coming across little things where the culture is a little bit more forward thinking than our own is.
Yeah.
When it's sprinkled into a lot of things where it seems like it's kind of the other way around. So.
Yeah, when this episode started out and it was like all these women and like they had like the chains behind them, I was like, what the heck is going on? And then it was like, oh, okay.
He's handcuffed to them.
Yeah, he's handcuffed to them.
Yeah. That's when I first noticed it too. It was like, wait, what the heck? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And it's like dozens of chains hanging off of the guy. It was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
I don't even know what. How do, what is, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
But the, and like the, it was this weird mix of like, of like progressive, progressive understanding of like gender and gender liquidity and or fluidity or whatever the particular term is, but like, and then
gender
having
moisture,
like, and then like very like old school like hard cast like gender roles. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm sure this juxtaposition intended. This is just a very, very harsh juxtaposition of things.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it makes sense because you have to have the character that's like the bad guy, and of course he's going to be the meanest out of everybody. Mm-hmm. So he's obviously going to adopt the hardest line out of everybody. But still, I guess I end up being more intrigued by odd little things in the episodes, like how the characters end up dressed from episode to episode.
Mm.
It's like they started out and they make the sort of joke in a very early episode about them dressed as like female wrestlers, kind of.
Yeah, in their uniforms.
Yeah.
Right. And I kind of enjoy when they have episodes like this, when they're trying to be more normal looking and they're wearing like quote unquote normal clothes.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like sort of future 70s clothes. I always love when they have stuff like that.
Do you
especially
your quasi-futuristic clothing,
right?
Yeah,
because it
sprinkle '80s and '70s, like yeah,
it's not completely and totally outlandish, even, and it actually looks kind of cool in a lot of ways, in my view. And plus, it was neat. I thought it was cool having them sort of switch around and have the normal gunslinger girl end up becoming like the melee one out of the two.
Yeah, that threw me off. Wait, why is Kay using the whip
and Yuri? Yeah.
Yuri,
yeah,
using the pistol. Like, not that they don't trade off. And yeah, they're just like,
This one was interesting because I want to say this. I think it was this episode where they address. Well, okay, in last like the last, I think it was the last episode of. The last watch party, like the little robot, they ended up using him as a bomb by taking his memory.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to say in this episode, they
have like a moment where they show that he's like halfway built back up again.
But in the previous episode he's completed. Yes. So, yeah. Like I saw that and was like, okay. And then, like, well, wait. So maybe when they were originally doing these, maybe this episode was after that one, and then just says,
because
it's a pretty common thing where they'll switch like episodes around and stuff like that.
Just see the Firefly,
right?
When they let those out of on TV,
where the studio head had their way over which one got shown first.
But in this case, it might have been like animation teams, like they just had to swap them because they were behind.
It's just like one sort of little shot, like you see. Him, you know, the robot fully, you know, complete, like doing stuff, but it was still cool, like in this one, that's still like them addressing that, like another little thing, like mentioned before about, you know, where they lived, them, you know, still dressing, the workers were still working. So it's nice, like having those little throwbacks here and there. So
there's a little bit of continuity of the universe, even though the stories themselves aren't totally don't have a lot of continuity individually.
Yeah. But
before we get too far, in the last episode, the previous one, a lot of danger, a lot of dummies. They also introduced an old childhood friend of Kay, who at the end of the episode, they say that after his ship blows up, do you think he survived? And Kay says, oh, it'll take more than that to kill him, which to me says that's probably going to be the reoccurring. He was probably going to show up again to antagonize.
Yeah. We were trying to remember his name, but.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up again.
The head of the space pirates, basically.
Yeah.
But jumping back into Love Is Everything, betting their lives on elopement.
Yeah.
I have to say I loved the ending. I don't know if I'm the only person, but I really loved like them sort of each going after the other.
Oh.
Oh yeah, the ending. We should, just to be clear, they put the girl slash dude, or formerly a dude, into a time traveling rocket.
Yeah, so was it Jonah, is that her name, or Joanna, or
Joanna,
something like that. Yeah,
but yeah, I think the entire idea is that it's supposed to be like a deep space tour, and so you get on this rocket, and by the time you get back, wherever you're going,
it's like 50 years
have passed.
Yeah,
and it's traveling so fast that it warps time, and so the other person that didn't go on the trip wouldn't have experienced time the same. So effectively, it would age the person.
Mm-hmm. So Clicky.
Right.
Yeah.
What a name. He'd be 50 years older than whatever age he was.
Right.
Yeah, he'd be 70 or something.
Yeah.
So here's this launch pad, and there's three of these rockets all lined up. And, of course, the bad father is like, oh, I'm going to curse this woman by sending her off on the rocket. Ha, ha, ha. And then Clicky, like, jumps on the other rocket and, like, goes after her.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was hilarious having the father also like, no, I can't live without my son, and jumps on the third rocket. Anyway.
Yeah, that was like, we're like, well, that's definitely an ending.
Yeah.
Right, and the dirty pair left like, well, I guess we didn't technically solve anything because they're going to have the same problems when they come back around in another 50 years. I guess we'll help them out then.
Yeah. Too. When we're grandmas or something, their little remark.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see if, like, in the future versions of the series, if they actually pick up that plot line again.
That would be pretty funny.
I don't know if the future, like, if the series that happened in the 90s was supposed to be them or, like, related to them or not. But
If I remember correctly, Dirty Pair Flash was, like, supposed to be, like, original Kay and Yuri, but...
Oh, okay.
Maybe they got on one of those rockets.
Well, they also... A lot of those shows, when they get revived, they kind of do like the Tenchi Muyo thing where they have like four or five series, but they don't bother like trying to explain why the characters are different. They just go to a new situation and call it done.
Yeah, Japan was doing reboots like way before we ever ventured into that territory.
But we digress. We need to get on to Gotta Do It. Love is a Woman's Detonator. Or what was the Hulu one was like, go for it, love makes a woman explode. Like these titles or something else.
Yeah, and a lot of them, there's usually love in there somewhere.
It's mm-hmm. Right.
Like love the or theme. Romance or something like that, yeah.
So this one kind of focuses on something in Yuri's past or yes. a character.
Right, like deep so, past.
Yeah.
Like when she was five or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like seven. Yeah, because she's 19 now and they met like 12 years ago.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so what were your thoughts on this episode?
Well, the ending was very sappy, and I did really enjoy. I actually kind of enjoyed the episode because it was another one where, like, each of them, Yuri and Kay, like, played to their strengths, and that they're trying to infiltrate a prison compound to free a bunch of engineers that are in sort of indentured servitude, so to speak.
Yeah,
right.
And it just was really interesting watching like them, like how they solo. Dispatch their parts of the mission. Like Kay is all about like action situation. Like
yeah, they had her doing.
She had a very Metal Gear Solid 5 approach to things. At least the way you play it, Joe, where it's like your tranquilizer gun was like used pretty heavily for a while.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Whereas Yuri was much more about like I'll knock out a guard, steal his clothes, and then like
yeah,
just walk around.
Disguised herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they even come across each other later. It's like, you know, people are going to shoot at you if you get seen in that get up right there.
Yeah, yeah, she's aiming the gun underneath. Hi. how about you, Jason? Thoughts?
I always end up liking just the brainless action stuff that Kay ends up doing a lot better than probably the plot lines in most of these, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just because there's actually some really decent animation every once in a while that kind of blows me away. It was,
and a lot of the stories are kind of stupid. So
yeah,
they're very, very light.
Yeah, yeah, they're definitely like classic serialized, just not trying to be a big, not trying to be Hamlet or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, whenever they have something where you know there's going to be some twist or some surprise, I always end up having my own theory, like, okay, well, they're probably going to do this or this. And it always ends up being like one little step back from being more extreme than whatever I came up with. And so I end up like disappointed in myself. It's like, well, that was obvious. Why didn't I think that? And then at the same time, it's like, well, that was really obvious. So why didn't I think of that? So anyway, the action has not disappointed me so far. Like, I absolutely loved seeing Kay running around. Just whenever she couldn't solve something by shooting at it, she'd pull out a grenade launcher and just outright blow it up.
Yeah, I kept blowing up all those towers and stuff.
That was probably my favorite stuff. And I liked the little jump packs, too, that they added in this episode. I thought they looked really neat.
Yeah. I was very glad that they actually added those, because at one point I'm like, she blew up the top of the tower. How'd she get the bombs up there?
And yeah.
Like,
oh, right. Yeah. She got the bombs up there. There we go. Yeah. Yeah. This one, I don't know if this one, like, just shows age or, like, nothing. The whole thing of, like, oh, I made a promise 12 years ago, so I'm going to go, like...
Right.
Like, okay, so is this, like, a cultural thing, or is this just, like, because I'm not 19 anymore, so, like, it was never really...
Like, I think it is, it's going to an extreme, because of course it's like...
That's what the
right, it's kind of the par for the course. But I have actually come across girls who have not nearly this extreme view of it, but something akin to that sort of feeling for somebody from their past. So it doesn't seem completely beyond the pale, but... It's pretty beyond the pale.
Yeah.
It's also a bit of a cultural thing, like where the promise of a promise made is like a sacred bond between the two people, kind of thing.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it's supposed to be in every culture, but like certain ones, like the sense of honor and holding to one's promise, like means.
It has
more cultural weight than others. And
plus, I think people build up a more glamorized view of anybody that they met in their childhood also.
Yeah,
what was threw me off is, like, in all these previous episodes, the two of them play up, like, liking attractive people. And Yuri knew, like, this Billy kid wouldn't grow up to be an attractive kid, but... Because she, like, found that other guy, and she's like, this can't...
Yeah,
no, wait, this can't be Billy, because this guy's way too handsome. Like, Billy won't grow up to... Billy wouldn't have grown up to be this handsome. So it was like, okay. So there's something, like... It just felt like there was something missing, like, between this bond of just, like, yay, we were five, and we promised that we would, like, fly the universe in a spaceship and get married. Like, okay, I get that at 5 years old, making crazy little weird things like that. Mm-hmm. But, like... maybe throw in a thing of, like, he saved my life or something. Like, they're just, it didn't seem like there was that real bond to that promise beyond just, like, we were 5 years old and we made this goofy promise. Like, but she stuck with it, like, so, like, tooth and nail, like, I'm quitting, I'm like throwing everything away to do this. And it was like, okay, this is stupid.
Yeah, I love the boss's reaction to it too. Is like, oh, thank goodness. I thought you were serious. Okay. Yeah. Kay, just go ahead. Do this. Fix everything.
I'm just going to
wait this out.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was just my thing. It was like, okay.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything really there. Like,
it's completely ridiculous. But the one thing that's fine is kind of interesting about it is that it's totally ridiculous on both sides. Like, in some ways, because, like, Billy, like, set up the system so that Yuri would still get a message from him, like, at some point in the future.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was ridiculous. They were both equally ridiculous. So it's kind of like, it's in that way, it's sort of a quote unquote perfect match, but at the same time, like, it's just completely ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've been known to read too much into things, but so maybe I'm reading too much into
does feel like this series has been going down purposely, like a checklist of tropes.
Yeah.
And it's making sure to hit every single one of them. And I know that's one of them that's popped up in a lot of different animes that I've seen. So
yeah, that one comes up pretty commonly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I get the promising one.
Yeah, well, heck, even in Punchline, they had it was one of those that showed up a little bit with the whole rings and they'll be friends forever sort of thing.
Like, that's
that
true.
It wasn't quite as heavily as ham-handed as this episode, but similar storytelling concept.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I bought it a little more in that one than this, but.
Yeah, it was definitely played up a lot better in that one. Like, you actually were supposed to care about their feelings. I think this one we were all supposed to kind of feel like they were completely ridiculous. Like, the boss was like, after she like,
yeah.
I was like, you were how old? Oh. Yeah. It was like watching his face fall.
Yeah.
It was like one of the best moments.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm going to turn around now. I'm just going to pretend I didn't hear any of this.
Well, yeah, and it's funny too, because you end up losing track pretty quickly too, that the characters are, they're kind of pushing the outside edge of it, but they're still teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Given to acts of, what the heck are you thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is funny, though, like, as far as an anime goes, they're some of the oldest characters that I think we've come across, but
yeah,
they still
not
act.
School.
Just barely, though.
Yeah.
Barely, but yeah.
Yeah. It just makes me wonder what type of high school were they going to that they just like got right out of high school and they were ready to go straight into the mercenary biz.
Yeah.
My suspicion
or
is
if they ever did go to high school.
Yeah.
I think they may have gone through to ninja high school effectively. Where
ninja
they,
high school.
See, that's an episode I want to see. I want to see what episode where they came from that it built them into these characters.
Well, maybe in some future episodes.
Right.
We'll perhaps get to that. So
what forged this team?
Yeah. All right, so that'll do it for this week's watch party. So next week we will hit 9, 10, and 11.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Of Dirty Pair.
Yes, so it'll be Hire Us, Better to Get Better-Looking Bodyguards. Episode 10, What? We're Brutal Kidnappers? ? 11, Ho, 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 Dresses and Men Are Better New.
Hey, no love in any of those.
No, that's new.
Interesting. Okay, well.
It's a trend.
Yeah.
Or an anti-trend or something.
Well, like we mentioned, it's not too late to join us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the episodes. Caleb, how can they do that?
You can go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow and leave comments there. Like our page while you're at it. It's awesome. We post all those stories. Links is there as well. And if you're looking for, if that's not your speed, you like Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/robotsattackme, all one word put together. And we also will be put announcements and stuff up there as well. And the ultimate place to find everything about us is robotsattack.me. That is our own website. So you can catch it all there.
That's right. And of course, when we do the news segment later on in the show, a lot of our news stories have pictures and videos and stuff like that. So when we post them at those various links, you can go check them out. Cause you know, if you're driving right now, you can't
actually look at the stuff.
Look at the stuff. So
yes.
Not safely, you know. And don't do that.
And don't do it. But all right, we're going to take another music break here on KCU Santa Clara, and then we'll come back with more Robots Attack with some new releases and the news. All right, we'll be back. All righty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. We are now in the new releases for this week.
Hooray!
We grab a handful of new releases and let you know what's coming out. Speaking of things coming out in the theater, we have the Peanuts movie for the first time ever. Snoopy, Charlie Brown, and the rest of the gang we know and love from Charles Schwartz's timeless Peanuts comic strip will be making their big screen debut like they've never been seen before in a CG animated feature film in 3D.
It is funny. I didn't expect that to fit so well into CG.
Yeah.
It actually works pretty good.
Yeah.
The animators at Blue Sky actually sat down and talked to Schultz's widow, and
oh, nice.
Got to sit down, like actually, like work on how they wanted to make it look so it would actually still feel like Peanuts, even though it was
CGI.
Cool. That was worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. All right, and here's a film that I kind of completely forgot about, but hey, Spectre. Cryptic message from Bond's past sends him on a trail to uncover a sinister organization. While M battles political forces to keep the Secret Service alive, Bond peels back the layers of deceit to reveal the terrible truth behind Spectre.
Dun, dun, dun.
Then we have The Hollow. When London conservationist Adam and his wife Claire move with their infant son to a remote house near the Irish forest, they quickly find their new neighbors unwelcoming. The discovery of a gruesome zombie fungus growing in the house is just the beginning, as the surrounding woods spew forth a terrifying array of folloric banshees, baby snatchers, and demons.
Nice.
And then we have, you know, it's just in time for Thanksgiving, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there you go. Bringing the family together.
Yeah. And then in Jackson Heights, Queens is one of the most culturally diverse communities in the U.S., where 167 languages are spoken.
Wow.
In Jackson Heights explores the conflict between maintaining ties to old traditions and adapting to American values.
Oh, very cool. So let's see. Over in DVDs and Blu-rays, we have Inside Out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So the running gag about Pixar movies is, what if cars had feelings? What if houses had feelings? What if feelings had feelings? But from what I hear, like, this movie is really good about hitting you in the feels. So
yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And from what I've heard from other sources of it actually does a really good job of following how neuroscience actually describes how emotional memories are built and maintained. So
nice.
Cool there. Then there's Digging for Fire, kind of a departure but still in sort of like, this one's about a married couple that's struggling through life and the trying to figure out where they sit, and they take a weekend apart to sort of
dig for fire,
understand who they are, how they stand the life, the universe, and everything. Then there is sort of a curious one called The End of the Tour, which is about these two writers, David Limsky and his friend David Foster Wallace, as they
are they also digging for fire?
I don't believe so.
Oh, okay.
But they did a book tour for it back in 1986 for a book called The Infinite Jest, and it's kind of about how they work and don't work together at the same time, but still maintain a friendship and stuff like that. It's kind of it sounds like one of those friendly rivalry sort of things. And then we have Roar.
What, the old TV series?
No, actually not. It's is it a documentary, a drama, or just an insanely bad idea? It was originally released in 1981, but it did not reach the public's attention until theaters this year. This movie is about the real life Hollywood couple Tippi Hedren and Noel Marshall, and how they are, and they make a movie about living with lions, tigers, and leopards, and cheetahs. So, it sounds like a very strange but interesting sort of movie.
Can imagine it being interesting from not just the kind of horror of the keeping that many animals, but kind of the retro feel too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently, like a lot of the stuff was sort of free form. Cinema verita, if you will.
Okay.
Where it's like they just sort of let the camera roll. There was some direction from Noel, but not much.
Okay.
Apparently it was a bit of a disaster to make. Like, people were getting like hurt by the animals and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It's one of those, like, I'm not sure you'd want to watch it, but it sounds like an interesting experience, if nothing else. So there you go.
They're called wild animals for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of not wild animals, but of being outside in the outdoors, where wild animals live. You can join the Guadalupe River Park Conservancy for the next series of outdoor environmental science classes designed specifically for homeschool students. Join us to learn about the water cycle and how you can combat the drought during our November Fight the Drought series, Wednesdays and Thursdays, 1:30 to 3 p.m., ages 5 to 12 only. Sorry, 13-year-olds and 4-year-olds. Drop-ins are welcome, but pre-registration is preferred and space is limited. For more information, call 408-298-7657 or visit www.grpg.org.
More like, take that, 4-year-olds. Okay, stepping into the realm of video games, we have, starting off, a little game that is next step in the series called Anno. This one is 2205. You are basically helming yet another one of the evil mega corporations that is trying to take over the world.
One of them.
Only this time you can get to do a little bit of it in space.
Space.
Anyway, it looks like the series has made a bunch of interesting steps forward in trying to do something a little bit more than the normal SimCity thing by adding more elements that are sort of venturing into the RTS realm and so on. Graphics look really nice. It looks like a solid game so far. Next up, we have Need for Speed.
Ooh.
They didn't come up with any extra names or anything.
Because this is a reboot.
But I need, like, Need for Speed the Reboot or something like that.
Ultimate Pursuit Chase Car. Drive Real Fast.
See, now that's better.
Need for Speed live action video parts.
Actually, I meant to mention that. The one thing that is pretty impressive about the game so far from what everybody has seen is that they do incorporate a lot of live action stuff, and they end up dropping a bunch of crazy cards into the live action that, of course, you can customize on the fly, so it ends up revealing pretty quickly that they were never there to begin with, and that computers are just crazy cool and can do really good graphics. So, yeah, it's been pretty neat seeing the stuff just seamlessly integrated into normal footage.
So does that mean that pretty soon they will, when you transition, the age-old full-motion video sequence will now look just like the game, even though they had actual actors on a set?
I don't think they're there with actors yet, but for especially cars. Uh-huh. I think cars are probably one of the easiest things because they're meant to be shiny and candy coated, which is what computer graphics have kind of specialized in for a long time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, next up in sort of shiny and candy coated realm, Yo-Kai Watch is finally coming to United States after I think a couple years of being the biggest thing in the world, except in
Japan.
It's coming out on the 6th. So yeah, basically the game that shattered all of the records for Pokemon, we finally get to see what the heck all of the fun is all about.
What's all this fuss?
Right. It basically looks like Pokemon except with ghosts. So it's an interesting twist. Next up, I'm sure nobody has ever heard of this, but there's a little series called Call of Duty. Getting a third incarnation of its sub-series called the Black Ops series. Just in case you're not familiar with any of them. They're about Black Ops. Anyway,
makes sense now.
That game is coming out on the 6th. Also, I actually should mention, Yo-Kai is coming just to the 3DS. The Need for Speed game was PC, PS4, and Xbox One. Anno is strictly PC. And Call of Duty Black Ops 3 is going to be PS4, Xbox One, PC, PS3, and Xbox 360. Although if you're trying to do any of the nifty new single-player stuff that they dreamed up, where you're trying to find out what the gameplay is like from the perspective of different characters, you're not going to be able to do that with either the PS3 or Xbox 360 version because single player has been purged from it.
Nope.
There's prices to pay for not upgrading.
Nope.
This is one of them.
Just not having the power to keep up with everything else.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know, like, what the line was, like, how much more power they actually needed in order to incorporate the stuff or not. Mm. But yeah.
Very cool.
That stuff is coming up.
All right, so from video games, we jump over to our friends, the comic books, from which we have gotten some very not-so-good video games. But that's not the point. Comic books are still totally awesome, though. Just translating them into other mediums has been challenging until recently. So, we start with Detective Comics number 46. This is the first time that Jim Gordon, after he has donned the mantle as the Batman, has left Gotham City. But he's going to put his detective skills to work as he helps the greatest superheroes in the world, the Justice League.
Oh, cool. I was wondering when that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. It happens this week. And then over at Marvel, it's Extraordinary X-Men. This is opening up a whole new chapter for the X-Men with Storm as the team leader. Together, the Extraordinary X-Men struggle with the familiar burden of being hated and feared while facing the threats and the likes of which they have never seen. And side note that makes me very happy, this one is arted by Humberto Ramos, who is...
Oh, sweet.
Definitely in the running for one of the nicest guys in comics.
I say he wins.
It'll be sort of a slugfest between, or a hug fest between him and Stan Sakai, from what I hear.
Oh man, he was really nice.
But moving on over to other things that are nice, it's oddly enough, Call of Duty Black Ops 3, issue number 1.
Mm.
Whoa!
From Dark Horse Comics. This is going to unpack a
Dark Horse Black Ops.
Mm-hmm. A particular special ops team in a mysterious situation in a grim future world war. Then we move over to Image with Paper Girls number 2.
Mm.
I mentioned Paper Girls probably last month.
Yeah.
It is another title by Brian K. Vaughan. And it continues the ever-expanding mystery that is surrounding the end of the world as witnessed by a group of high school girls on Halloween.
Hmm.
And then from IDW, it's My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, number 22. It's the Princess...
Yeah.
Yeah, Celestia is playing with Party for Luna, and they have asked Pinkie Pie to make the cake. Now the question is, can Pinkie Pie actually deliver?
Oh, no. Man. That's a recipe for some Pinkie Pie-ness right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know it.
Pinkie Pie make a cake. So our fine friends at Wacool have a few recommendations for us also.
Excellent.
There'll be a couple of echoes and some new stuff.
Anything specifically about Pinkie Pie?
No, Pinkie Pie did not make an appearance in their list.
Oh, man.
But they did bring
Shafted.
Up Titan number 2, which is from their own imprint. And then Winners by Anna Hellermark. He also mentioned Paper Girls number 2.
Okay.
And he mentioned Brian K. Vaughan's other big title, which is We Stand on Guard number 5.
Okay.
Nice.
And then a couple more. There is The Humans number 9 and Dark Corridor number 4.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, I will wrap us up with some music. We've got West Kirby Country Primary by Bill Ryder Jones, the third full-length solo release for the ex, the choral guitarist, was written and recorded in the house he grew up in. Alania by Floating Points. The debut full-length release for electronic producer Sam Shepard features a wide variety of influences, including Brazilian jazz and soul music.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Perfect Amundo by Billy Gibbons and the BFGs. The debut full-length solo release for the ZZ Top frontman features influences from Afro-Cuban music.
Huh.
All right, that's going to do it for new releases. We'll take a quick music break and then come back with the news. Shall we tease them the news?
Certainly. How about brain fungus?
What?
Didn't we have something like that in one of the movie reviews or something like that? That was Zombie Fungus.
Zombie Fungus. Okay. But maybe they're linked somehow.
Yeah. I found quite possibly the best Marvel crossover ever.
Mm. Nice. I look forward to that.
Yes.
Yes. And before we get too far away from the watch party, we had a comment come in through email, effectively.
Nice. It's never too late to comment. Even if we've moved on to a different subject, we don't care.
Yes.
We will stop because we want you to participate on the show.
Yes, because you are totally awesome. We want to know what you think. And they mentioned that the waiting dutifully for your spouse is very cultural. Traditionally, samurai would only see their wives but a few times a year.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And
that makes sense. Yeah.
They would have to arrive after dark and leave before daybreak. Wow. It's very specific rules and traditions there. Obviously, this isn't quite the case anymore. This is like ancient feudal samurai time. But like some of these traditions
Let's get in perspective.
Do kind of live on. And that, yeah. And you can sort of see that in how that is informed, how the Japanese view romantic wait dutifully equaling a good wife or upholding the honor of the family. So
okay,
cool.
So there you go, a little
some
insight.
Good perspective.
Nice, thank you, listener. All right, let's take that music break. We'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. Want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio? Stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip:
find us faster by searching for all car letters KSCU.
That's right.
News.
That's right. We are in the news. Welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. Let's news them.
Alrighty, so I'll start with my story about brain fungus. Apparently, there's a new study that suggests that Alzheimer's might be related to a brain fungus. Every year, there are hundreds of people that suffer from this debilitating, mind-altering, personality-robbing disease.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a chance that this might be like... They've been trying to figure out what the source of Alzheimer's is, because it kind of doesn't make any sense why like all of a sudden it's like the brain just kind of goes like it just like
that's a very technical term.
That's a technical term there.
And they think that a new study seems to suggest that this brain fungus might actually be causing the symptoms of dementia. Now, they haven't ruled out that there might be other things, but if the looks like there is a decent case that it is a fungal infection that is one of the causes of this, that it starts to secrete chemicals, hormones, and starts to degrade the brain itself. So
maybe one day they'll have a spray like they do for athlete's foot for Alzheimer's.
Probably something more like a pill that I don't know. A spray don't think will go through the skull nearly as well as an injection or.
It's the future. Ingestion. You never know.
maybe hypo spray.
There you go, hypo spray.
Bones walk up next to you. You're up, and you'll feel better.
The burning says it's working. Okay, next up we have. Quite possibly the best thing that has happened with Marvel Comics in a very long time, at least in my view. Over the weekend, Stan Lee was out and about doing photo ops, as you do when you're Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And
at Kamikaze?
I don't really... It doesn't say specifically Kamikaze.
Okay, because so that was happening over the Halloween weekend.
That's right.
Stan Lee's Kamikaze!
Maybe. I'm surprised they wouldn't mention it in the story. But anyway, he got to meet with who I still believe, and I know I'm probably in the minority on this,
okay,
is probably the biggest star on the internet right now. And I know you're probably thinking PewDiePie or something like that.
Well,
but no, I'm sticking with it. I'm going to say it's still Grumpy Cat.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, yeah, Stan Lee got to meet Grumpy Cat up close and personal, got to actually hold him, and there's pretty awesome pictures floating around the internet now of Grumpy Cat looking all grumpy with Stan Lee with his face right above his trying to look all grumpy.
So, does that mean that there'll be a, like, Grumpy Cat comic crossover?
One can only hope. I think I have a feeling once you've met Grumpy Cat,
it changes like you forever.
Person to feline, mm-hmm. that yeah, you're sold like forever. Mm-hmm. And I feel that way without even meeting him. So I'm afraid of what would happen to me if I actually like got to hold Grumpy Cat.
Grumpy Cat, yeah.
So yeah.
Like, yeah, she has power. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that maybe they'll put Grumpy Cat with like a tie-in with Incredible Squirrel Girl or Howard the Duck or something. Maybe they'll.
I think that could work.
They could. She could show up in there.
I actually see that working. Yeah.
Howard the Duck is kind of already Grumpy Duck, so
they can have
like a clash. Sort of, like a meet.
They can have a grump off.
A grump off.
Yeah, but yeah, the Squirrel Girl is kind of the opposite. So yeah, you can see that working too.
The balance
being
something.
The odd couple.
Yeah.
So,
why are you so mad all the time? Why are you so happy all the time?
So I have a question for you, Caleb. Do you have a space story today? If you don't, it doesn't matter. I'm just trying to. I'll be
disappointed if he doesn't. But I mean,
if you don't, you'll sort of.
It relates to the sun. So
No. Okay. Then I'll just do this one.
The sun's not in space.
So it looks like. It looks like there's going to be a new Star Trek series coming in 2017. See, if you were going to do a space one, I was just going to segue off, but it doesn't matter.
Sweet.
So Star Trek is returning to TV with a new series. Alex Kurtzman, the Transformers and Fringe, will serve as executive producer, and new episodes will be available exclusively on the CBS All Access digital subscription service.
What?
Following a special one-time preview broadcast on CBS leading into the premiere. It will be the first original series developed for U.S. audiences on CBS All Access. Hmm. I won't get into price.
It ain't free. We'll say that.
But it will also be distributed concurrently for television and multiple platforms around the world by CBS Studios internationally. The new Star Trek show will, quote, introduce new characters seeking imaginative worlds and new civilizations while exploring dramatic contemporary themes. Kurtzman co-wrote and produced the two most recent Star Trek movies, but CBS notes the new show is not connected to next year's Star Trek Beyond, the third in the current incarnation of the feature films. So there you go.
Hmm.
You will finally have some new Star Trek on...
Yeah.
TV, quote unquote, in 2017.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they make a full court press with app releases for all of that or something. Because I haven't heard hardly anything about it until now.
Yeah, and then just the show itself, like if they're gonna even like mention the Enterprise or like you know what it's gonna be, if it's just gonna be like just you know taking place in the Star Trek universe, but just. Have like absolutely nothing to do with the Enterprise or you know
right. They're all like funkies from every series. Everybody who's been like a troublemaker and riffraff. Oh wait, no, that was Voyager.
Well, there's one of our listeners is celebrating with you guys also with us also about
sweet
a new Star Trek.
Oh, nice.
And speaking of celebrations and things of that nature.
Yes.
How about we celebrate a step towards cleaner power here in the United States? Now, the solar industry is...
Yay, huge, celebrate!
And this is the first time in 20 years that we will have a new nuclear reactor power plant.
Oh, but nuclear's bad.
No, nuclear is actually quite clean, by and large. And it's... going to be a brand new facility, so things like some of the more recent disasters involving nuclear power will probably not
affect this particular plant. There'll be new problems, probably, but that's a different issue entirely.
Bravely venturing into new problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yes, while the radioactive material does still present a certain amount of waste and trouble that way, the power that it creates is still much cleaner than either coal or... and it's more it's cleaner than coal and much more easily regulated than, say, hydroelectric or solar. So, and it can easily feed a large area without having a lot of extra unusual infrastructure and stuff like that. So,
yeah, and depending on how you look at this country, France really likes it, so I mean that might sell you on it. Or
yeah, the like, number of boo. European countries are pretty big into nuclear power for a lot of things, but it won't
sell Jeb Bush on it.
it's not, obviously it isn't the end all be all. Like it we should use it as stepping stones to create even cleaner forms of energy. Mm. But
that's right,
a cleaner power plant. This one's going to be in Tennessee Valley, near Spring City in Tennessee. So, some of these southern states have had a history of using coal for a lot more of their power. So, moving more places off of coal is a step in the right direction. It may not be the ultimate step, but
yeah,
you know, we need to keep moving forward is better. So. There you go.
Okay. Well, my story is nowhere near as serious as that. As you could probably guess from my last story, it was incredibly serious.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But this is also new innovations in technology, so that's awesome.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
They could be used horribly.
Could, with the key word, right? But could.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. If you have wanted to become like the best graffiti artist in the world but don't have any skills, somebody came up with the perfect little tool for you. This is called the spray printer, and basically it's a little thing that clips onto a spray can and hooks up to your smartphone.
Okay.
And between the two of them, you just slowly move your hand back and forth, and it automatically triggers the spray can like a dot matrix printer.
Okay.
Over a wall, so it'll just automatically paint whatever picture you're slowly creating by waving the can across.
But you don't have to necessarily use this for graffiti, though.
No, actually, right? The primary thing that people are trying to sell it for is if you want to do murals on a wall in your home and stuff like that.
Let's push that.
But, I mean, you want to be able to compete with Banksy, too. So, I mean...
Mm-hmm. But Banksy's thing about creating more art in open places, that's one of his big things. So this would still be not so much in competition, but it would be fulfilling his grander vision.
That's true. And yeah, the extra selling point is that it allows you to do things like, basically on a scale that you wouldn't normally have access to. Basically, you can dream up something on your cell phone that has a pretty nifty design to it or a nice little bit of photography and be able to put it on a very large wall really quickly. They have one of the illustrations of the idea for the project is actually a very nice portrait of a woman that she was able to just throw up on her entire wall. That's probably could have been worded better, but
able to translate the image from small to large.
But yeah, it's still a really cool idea just from the standpoint of turning human beings into human dot matrix printers. I think that's living the dream right there.
Skynet, they're coming. That's all the robots are going to take you over.
Yeah. Totes.
Well, speaking of cool things, if you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes, but you have limited time to volunteer, you can join the San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. Okay, so We're going to have the all-female Ghostbusters coming out next year, right?
Right.
Well, it looks like something else is getting the all-female cast.
Okay.
Ocean's 11 gets all-female cast remake.
I heard about
starring
this. Starring
Sandra Bullock. Following Hollywood's latest trend of rebooting older male lead movies with an all-female cast, IndieWire is reporting that Sandra Bullock has reportedly signed on to star in the remake of Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's 11. Soderbergh original star George Clooney and producer Jerry Weintraub kickstarted the project last year, but the film only started gaining momentum recently. Hunger Games director Gary Ross has reportedly signed on to direct the feature. The film was allotted to in a leaked email from executive Amy Pascal during the Sony hack last December. But despite that, has been kept under wraps until now. Still isn't clear just how connected the remake will be to Soderbergh's version, or if it will be connected at all, but rumor has it that Clooney may reprise his role as Danny Ocean for a brief cameo. Considering how close he and Bullock are as friends and co-workers, it's not completely implausible. Although there aren't many more details on when the film is expected to begin shooting or who will star alongside Bullock, IndieWire, sorry, Latino review, did confirm that a screenwriter has been attached.
I feel like Latino Review has been slacking lately. We don't get many scoops from there.
I know. Well, maybe they're just waiting for the big ones. That's, they're like, all right, you guys can have these little pickings, but
right,
we're holding on this one here.
You play in your little pool. splashy. We're swimming in the ocean, baby.
So does that excite you? A remake of Ocean's 11?
Not specifically, but I will say I'm a gigantic fan of Sandra Bullock, so I probably am going to end up liking it, no matter whether it's supposed to be an outright reboot or not. So.
So, speaking of rebooting things, like I mentioned earlier that working on Cleaner Power... Well, there is...
What, there's more?
There is still more, and I mentioned Solar.
I don't believe it.
Solar is kind of a big thing, in case you hadn't
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah, was it... someone recently said, like, if you could power the world for a year off of the amount of energy the sun lets off in 1 hour. So, you know, if we can tap into
to be fair, if you turn the entire planet into a solar collector, but...
And you probably need to strip off the atmosphere to get that really hard particles. But that aside, needless to say, there's a lot of energy coming from the sun. Let's put it that way.
That's true. That is true. It is a gigantic atomic power plant, effectively.
Mm-hmm. And solar being then kind of the new hotness, and how can we use more of the existing structures that we have, because like putting up like solar farms is all well and good, but putting them out in Arizona where there's a lot of sun and it'd be a good place for them, it is a long way from most of the metropolitan areas which are consuming all of this power. So a couple people have said, well, why don't we start turning some of these buildings that we have into solar farms?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Google thought that's a pretty darn good idea. We have a lot of technology, specifically mapping technology. And we also have lots of imagery of the Earth, because they've been taking pictures from the satellites for years now. They can actually now calculate, using Google Earth data, how much sun your house or building gets. So you can maximize the space of your building for solar energy. And like that's kind of rad. They have a program which will... take all that data, translate into something really useful.
Yeah, that'd be good. Like, oh, this building gets it like way more than this one over here, so mm-hmm. let's put more on this one. Okay.
Do we need to angle them so we get better better sun exposure?
Nice.
How do we maximize our space? And I think that's really smart.
Yeah, it's funny. One thing, a news story that since it happened in Britain, I don't think hardly anybody over here even heard of it. But they've been doing a lot of like skyscraper building in Britain, specifically in London, and it's had to go through this extensive process of making sure that it was something that they really wanted to fit into their landscape and so on. So they made this really interesting building that has a nice subtle curve to it.
Okay.
It's kind of a giant hand scooped out mm-hmm. to the side of the building, and it left behind like a wall of glass.
Okay.
The unfortunate side effect was that it ended up being a perfect solar collector, and it was literally like melting cars' ashes.
Oh.
Ever since that, I've been wondering to myself, though, well, why didn't they just put a solar farm there instead?
Yeah. It's not about it. Just, you know, hey, the future of the city, we can start powering itself by its mere existence.
Right.
Yeah.
Turn those lemons into lemonade. Come on, London.
Yeah. London, turn your lemons into lemonade.
Yeah.
Plus, I just love the idea that London, with all of the fog and everything, was still having that problem. That's amazing to me.
Reading your tabloids about the queen and mm-hmm. get onto the solar panels.
Right. No, everybody was like trying to play with the tabloids, like seeing if they could light them on fire. Oh, any minute now. My hand's feeling kind of warm and I'm sort of getting a sunburn, but... Anyway, next up, my big glorious story is that Mark Wahlberg has been confirmed as the next $6 billion man.
They're going to rebuild him?
Faster?
Faster, better, stronger, with more Wahlberg in him.
Of course, that's probably still less than if you tally all the film roles that we've spent the U.S. has spent trying to find Mark Wahlberg and bring him back home. I'm sure we've spent more than that.
You mean Matt Damon?
Matt Damon? Dang it!
Oh, the joke. Sorry, man.
I wrecked it.
No. At this point, they're interchangeable. Come on. At this point. I know a lot of people are like, how dare you? Come on. Just look at him. Anyway. So, yeah, if you're familiar with what they're originally going for, yes, they did change it. It's not the $6 million man anymore, because that seems like small potatoes now. It has to be in the billions.
Mm.
Yeah.
$6 billion man?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It probably should be said like that every single time. I think that would mm-hmm. probably sell more tickets. But yeah, in the realm of rebooting all of the things, this is definitely one of the big ones. So
it's going to be a movie or TV?
It is going to be a movie set to release December. This is oddly specific for being far away. That's why I kind of don't trust it.
Yeah, they're pulling a Marvel here.
Right, but it's December 22nd, 2017 is okay. When they're shooting for.
Okay.
I'm going to say shooting for, even though they sound very sure.
Well, yeah. You can sound as sure as you like.
It doesn't make me wonder, like, oh, we filmed it like 3 years ago. We'll just keep it in the vault until then. Mark Wahlberg's just sitting there, like, stewing, like, come on, I need another big one.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man. I wish there was, like, some way to cut away from, like, that, like, some announcement of that to, some chicken bought and Boston or something like,
okay.
You know, just like, oh, he's already perfect. You know, like you can't build on, you can't build on perfection. What are you?
I don't care how much money you throw at him. he was always worth $6 billion to me.
Okay. So let's see. Well, okay. All right. Maybe some people find Mark Wahlberg cute.
Mm-hmm.
Some people.
So, you know, once this...
Mean Matt Damon? Sorry.
Some people find both Matt Damon and Mark Wahlberg cute. So this story, though, asks the question, why, when something is adorable, do we get the urge to squeeze it and squish it?
Uh-oh. This could go to a dark place.
In a 2015 study, psychological and psychological science, Yale University psychologists Oriana Aragon and team found that people who have extremely positive reactions to images of cute babies also, quote, displayed stronger aggressive expressions, such as wanting to pinch the baby's cheeks. Speaking of pinching, another experiment in the recent study found that participants popped more bubble wrap when they saw images of cute baby animals than those who viewed images of older animals.
Oh, they're so cute. I just want to pop them.
This shows that if given the chance to squeeze something while seeing the pictures, they would, the Aragon stresses, not with any real intent to harm the creatures.
Okay.
So what explains our impulse to squeeze or nibble adorable animals? For some people, experiencing a strong emotion is followed by, quote, an expression of what one would think is an opposing feeling. So you may have tears of joy, nervous laughter, or wanting to squeeze something that you think is unbearably cute.
Okay.
Even if it's an animal you'd normally want to cuddle or protect.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just like, why are you crying? It's like, no, these aren't like tears of sadness, they're tears of joy, even though most people...
Is this where the girls hitting boys thing comes from? Because my arm is sore from that.
That secondary reaction may also serve to scramble and temper their initial overwhelming emotion, thus bringing the person into balance. For instance, the 2015 study showed people who had such positive and negative concurrent reactions retained their emotional equilibrium more quickly. And if you're caring for something adorable, that's important. Because, quote, because they may help people to regain control over their intense emotions, these expressions help the caretaker to care for an animal or baby appropriately, says Aragon says. So that's because cuteness creates a positive feeling associated with a strong approach motivation, which is an action triggered by a desire for a good outcome, says study leader Hishiro Nitano, director of the Cognitive Psychophysiological Laboratory at Japan's Hiroshima University. It's a go-get-it attitude, Nitano says, and such feelings can switch easily between positive and negative. Tano also doesn't think that the negative impulses toward cuteness is really aggression because the person doesn't want to hurt the animal or baby. Instead, the secondary feeling is more like disgust or keeping a distance from the object. This kind of behavior can be seen in children, he says. Boys who love a certain girl pretend to have no interest in her at all and try to ignore her. And that image is so cute, I can't stand it. Where's that bubble wrap? Says the article. So yeah, maybe it's okay. Something sort of along those same lines.
That makes sense.
Girl punching, like... Mm-hmm. It's your emotions and your
trying to
synapses and stuff and stuff. Yeah, just trying to create that balance instead of getting like overwhelmed by one. So
okay, before we get too far away from my last one, I wanted to follow it up relatively soon with this one.
Well, there's one. We can do one more story, and then we got to wrap it up with this day in history. So whoever would like to go, or whomever.
Okay, I'll just go for it. This is kind of a big deal as far as anybody who is super into 1980s stuff, along with the last story that I did. But this one probably even more so because this was more of a cult hit favorite and one of my personal favorites as well. Fox has greenlit officially The Greatest American Hero to be remade.
Interesting.
You remember that one?
I remember that one.
Oh, man. It was beautiful. So, yeah, if you're not familiar, basically it's a dude that finds a super suit that...
An alien civilization.
Right. That basically whenever he wears it, it gives him, like, normal Superman abilities. I shouldn't say normal. Like, super normal Superman
and
abilities.
Exceptional abilities, like flight and stuff like that.
Right. So, yeah. It'll be kind of interesting to see something that isn't founded on, like, somebody having a mutant gene or some other inherent thing that was awoken or anything like that. But especially it's going to be really fun seeing them trying to reboot something that was, if you've ever seen it, so naturally kind of, I don't know, it's hard to explain it even. It was very sappy,
yeah,
but it had a really good heart to it, kind of. But it almost looked like an American version of a lot of the Japanese, like, 70s and 80s superhero stuff. Because it had, like, a really heavy cheese factor. Like, the super suit did not look cool.
No, it had like early era Sentai Warrior kind of feel to it.
But yeah, it was sort of interesting seeing something like that, just with a geeky white guy with sort of carrot top hair trying to pilot this super suit. Anyway, hopefully people en masse will get to feel my glee with the next series instead of them trying to make it into some sort of gritty, hard-boiled reboot. Because oh, that would be a shame.
Yeah.
They haven't announced like any starring in it or...
I haven't... Let's see. Nobody I recognize, at least. Once I get a firmer grip on who some of these people are, so I can tell where they've been and so on, I'll let you know.
Alrighty. Alright, well, I will wrap us up here on KC Santa Clara and Robots Attack with This Day in History, November 2nd. We have 1889. North Dakota and South Dakota became the 39th and 40th states, respectively.
Yeah.
Man, South Dakota always tagging along. North Dakota's stuff.
Then we jump to 1947. Howard Hughes flew the Spruce Goose on its first and only flight.
Oh, there you go.
I don't believe it really flew. It's all a hoax.
Where is its birth certificate?
Yeah. Then we jump 1 year later. That's right, 1 year later.
Was it even really made of spruce?
Or was it really a goose? In 1948...
How many geese had to die?
I don't know. We'll have to do research. So, 1948, Harry S. Truman defeated Thomas E. Dewey to the surprise of pollsters and newspapers in the greatest presidential upset in history.
Oh,
I think upset. That's the one where, like, Truman held up the newspaper that said the other person won, because they already, like, the newspaper already printed.
They called it.
They called it already, even though the polls hadn't all been in or whatnot. Then we jump to 1959. 21 game show contestant Charles Van Doren admitted that he had been given questions and answers in advance.
They made a movie.
Yeah,
yep.
Quiz show.
Quiz show. Starring Voldemort.
Starring right. Mr. Quiz. and Quiznos.
Yeah. Then we jump to 1976. Jimmy Carter defeated Gerald Ford, becoming the first U.S. president from the Deep South since the Civil War. Then we go to 1984, Velma Margie Barfield, a convicted murderer, became the first woman to be executed since capital punishment was reinstated in 1976, which was the last year events that I mentioned. Interesting.
Circular.
Then we round it out with 2003. V. Gene Robinson was consecrated as bishop by the U.S. Episcopal Church, becoming the first openly gay bishop in the church.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's progressive there.
There you go. End on a positive note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We want to thank you all for tuning in and listening. And, of course, just because it's the end of the show doesn't mean you can't still participate. Because, like I said, a lot of our stories have cool pictures or there's more to them or videos and that sort of thing. And you're like, I want to go and see those videos or pictures, but I'm driving or I missed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb, how can they still participate in the show? How can they still let us know their thoughts, their dreams, and their suggestions for topics?
Well, if you want to do that right now or some point in the future, if you happen to be getting this by time travel, you can do that at facebook.com/robotsattackshow. Or twitter.com/robotsattackme. But if you want one place, one URL to remember, that is robotsattack.me. That has archives of the show, plus comments and links to everything else there as well. But those are the best ways to get a hold of us. Please let us know what you think.
Yes. All right. That's going to do it for tonight. On behalf of myself, Caleb, and Jason, thank you for listening, and we will be back next Monday from 7 to 9. Take it easy, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
Laters.
Raccoon. Veronica. Misto.